When you're a sailor, you encounter many different types of people, from the other members of the crew to officers and passengers and folks you meet ashore. And the kinds of people you meet, they tend to be adventurous and sometimes a bit outrageous, because these are the types of people who are attracted to ships and the sea. And this is the type of person we meet in today's story, a flirtatious, thrill-seeking Irishman named Tom Delaney. Hi, everybody. This is Malcolm Torres, the host of the Sea Stories and Science Fiction podcast. I'm glad you're back for another episode. Today, we have a story called Tom Delaney, or An Irishman Taken in Tow. This is from an old book of sea stories called Ocean Adventures, published in the 1850s by John Sherburne Sleeper. Before we jump into today's tale, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor. And without further ado, today's story is Tom Delaney, or An Irishman Taken in Tow. We had a passenger on board the ship bound from Maranham to Boston, whose name was Tom Delaney. He was as good-hearted a fellow as ever left the bright Isle of Old Erin, and that is saying a good deal. He cared nothing about self, but was ever anxious to do a good turn to others. He was a pleasant companion, could sing a good song, tell a good story, and loved a joke and a frolic at all times and on all occasions. But Tom Delaney must have been destitute altogether of that mental organ which frogenitalists dignified as the name of cautiousness, for he had not a grain of prudence in his character. He always acted from impulse, never from deliberation, and was ever getting himself into some disagreeable scrape or another. Indeed, the circumstances which led him to leave Maranham will serve to explain his character in part. He met, in his walks one afternoon, a Portuguese lady of remarkable grace and beauty in her features and figure. Tom's susceptible heart was inflamed in a moment, and although a dark-looking, mustachioed cavalier accompanied her, he stepped up to the dark-eyed beauty without waiting for an introduction, and forthwith began to make the agreeable. The lady blushed and smiled and did not seem disposed to resent Tom's familiarity, for he was a likely-looking fellow, and his address was that of a gentleman. He was always a favorite with the ladies, in whatever country he visited. The senor, however, who accompanied the lady, and who, by the way, was her husband, regarded the conduct of Tom as exceedingly impertinent. His brow grew as dark as midnight, and portended a furious storm, and when Tom attempted to take the lady's hand, in order to give a greater weight to a compliment which he was paying to her beauty in his broken Portuguese, the scowling signor thought it time to interfere, seized Tom roughly by the collar, and with violence thrust him aside. Tom was indignant at receiving such cavalier treatment, especially in the presence of a lady, although he richly deserved it. He shook off the swarthy Portuguese, and leveling a blow at his lantern jaw, knocked him down as flat as a flounder. The lady screamed. Some soldiers made their appearance, and Tom, finding the affair likely to prove a serious one, thought the wisest course for him was to retreat from all convenient dispatch. He gave leg bail accordingly, distanced the soldiers in the race, and succeeded in making his escape. He learned a few hours afterward that the lady, who, by the brilliancy of her charms, had been involuntarily the cause of the difficulty, was a niece of the governor, and that her husband, an officer of rank, was frantic with rage and had ordered officers to seek him in all directions, and he might be revenged on how the blow which he had received. Tom knew that close imprisonment for an indefinite time was the mildest punishment which he could expect if taken, and therefore lost no time in gathering his traps together and in the course of the night smuggled himself on board the Blackbird. On the following day he left the dark-eyed Portuguese beauty and her fierce and vindictive husband far behind. On the passage, when near the equinoctial line, one forenoon the wind died away. The sea was quite smooth and the weather extremely hot. Tom Delaney said he must have a swim. Captain Williams remonstrated against this whim and stated that sharks were frequently seen in those latitudes, that in the calm they were almost certain to make their appearance and would sometimes lie perdu beneath the vessel, until something fell into the water which would suit their not very fastidious appetites, when they would attack it with terrific voracity. Tom listened to his arguments, but was not convinced. Captain Williams told Tom further that these sharks delighted in getting hold of a good, hearty human being, now and then, just by ways of change, and that nothing would give them greater satisfaction than to try the flavor of a full-blooded Irishman, especially if he sported a bit of the brogue. But it was all to no purpose. Tom persisted in his resolution to have a swim. "Well, Mr. Delaney," said Captain Williams, "if you are determined to go overboard, I insist on you putting on my cork jacket. You will be safer with that than with nothing on, anyhow." Tom demurred at this, declaring that he could swim like a fish without the assistance of a cork jacket. But the captain was inexorable and carried his point. Tom put on the cork jacket, which was a noble one, buoying his head and shoulders high above the water, and overboard he went. He did not like this new apparatus for swimming, but it was too late to remedy the difficulty, and he paddled away at a furious rate, enjoying the delicious sport, until one of the men on the forecastle fixed his eye on something at a distance and shouted aloud, "There's a shark!" And sure enough, the fin of a huge sea monster was seen rising out of the ocean at a few rods distant. Tom, having no wish to do battle with a shark in his own element, came alongside in double quick time and was helped on board before the big fish had time to pay his respects to his leg, if carnivorously disposed. It was soon ascertained, however, that the fins, which had excited the alarm, belonged not to a shark but to an albacore, an animal that is exceedingly fond of fish but seldom meddles with flesh. He was a huge fellow, some 9 to 10 feet long, and as strong as a whale. Tom Delaney was indignant at being interrupted in his sport by an albacore, and threatened vengeance against the fish, whose appearance was so malapropos, causing him to scramble out of the water in a most undignified manner, and what was worse, barking his shin badly as he was climbing up the side, without waiting to make any alteration in his garments. Without even taking off his cork jacket, he seized a stout 5-pronged pair of grains which he had on board, ran out to the bowsprit, and lowered himself down onto the martingale stay with the bloody intent of killing and capturing the albacore. Captain Williams assured Tom that even if he could plant the grains in the body of the fish, it would be of little use, as the albacore was a large and very powerful animal, and if struck would soon, by his violent struggles, free himself from the instrument of death, and part the line, and carry off the grains in triumph. Tom, however, was resolved, as he said, to teach the albacore better manners than to come near a gentleman when he was bathing, and to pass himself off for a shark. Besides, he began to think it would be capital sport to capture the albacore. Tom took his station beneath the bowsprit on the martingale. The fish was soon seen approaching the bows of the ship, unconscious of the inhospitable reception which it was in contemplation to greet him. The mate, seeing how matters stood, and being apprehensive of losing the grains, called out to Mr. Delaney to make fast the rope which was attached to the grains, and Tom, perceiving the propriety of the order, without reflection, complied with it by taking a timber hitch around his own body just below the armpits. He had hardly got the end of the rope secured in this way before the albacore was under the bows, crossing the hawse, and swimming gracefully along just below the surface of the water. Tom's heart beat quicker than was its wont. He pointed the death-dealing weapon, lifted it as high in the air as his arms could reach, and then threw it with all the force of which he was capable into the lower part of the back of the ill-fated albacore. The fish was surprised and not a little vexed at such an unceremonious proceeding, and naturally desirous of avoiding a repetition of similar favors, started off with great velocity, which the grains firmly fixed in the muscles of his back. The line, one end of which was attached to the grain staff, and the other to Tom's body, was a piece of small but new 9-thread ratlin stuff, and about 10 fathoms long. It was all run out in a hurry, but even then the affrighted fish showed no inclination to pause in his mad career, either not knowing the effect which his further progress would have upon Tom, or not caring of it. He did not even slacken his pace, the consequence of which was that Tom Delaney was most unexpectedly and reluctantly, on his part, jerked with tremendous violence from the martingale where he was standing, laughing at the mischief he had done, into the sea. It was no longer a laughing matter, and for once in his life Tom lost his presence of mind, but the captain's cork jacket, which he fortunately had on, did him good service. It floated him on top of the water. It was a curious sight to see that fish darting rapidly along, keeping within a few feet of the surface, and towing off at a rate of 10 to 12 knots an hour. Tom Delaney, who sometimes, with his head towards the ship, and sometimes towards the finny friend to whom he was attached by ties not easily severed, sometimes in one position and sometimes in another, with his features distorted with terror, bellowed out for assistance with all his might. The ship's company, a set of merry dogs, although they liked Tom passing well, and were alarmed at the awkward position of which he was placed, could not for their lives help laughing heartily. But Captain Williams viewed the business in a serious light, and ordered the quarter-boat to be lowered immediately, which was done, and the second mate, and four men started off on a wild goose chase after Tom. It was lucky for him that his friend, the albacore, had lost his presence of mind also, and instead of steering in the direction to a place the greatest possible distance between him and the ship, was proceeding on a most crooked course, with his head by turns towards every point of the compass. And he changed his course so frequently and so suddenly without consulting his companion that the awkwardness of Tom's position was much increased thereby. Sometimes the poor fellow was towed along very steadily, when suddenly the fish would alter his course, and Delaney would be flopped over on his back or his side without ceremony. But with the assistance of the cork jacket, he managed to keep his head above water the greater part of the time, although he was constrained to swallow much larger quantities of the briny element than he was accustomed to, or then, indeed, was agreeable to him. And he rejoiced from the bottom of his heart when he saw that the boat was starting to his rescue. For the business was becoming tedious, and what with his struggles and his bellowings and his saline draughts, he was getting rather exhausted. Now, Mr. Davis, the second mate, bade the men in the boat give way with a will, and off they dashed, full chisel after the albacore, or rather poor Tom Delaney, who was fastened to him. But the thing was not so easily done as could be wished for. The albacore, although evidently losing his strength, exerted all his energies to keep at a good distance from the boat and tacked ship several times with great adroitness, to the great discomfiture of our friend Tom. Once, indeed, by an expert maneuver, Mr. Davies succeeded in getting between the albacore and Delaney, and he and Bob Nicholson, who pulled the aft oar, laid hold of Tom by the hair of his head and by his ears, and exerted all their strength to get him into the boat. When the albacore made a convulsive spring and fairly jerked Tom out of their hands, to the great mortification of the second mate and crew, and succeeded in carrying him off again in triumph at a rate of 7 or 8 knots. Captain Williams, seeing how matters were going, began to be seriously alarmed for the fate of his madcap passenger, and ordered the stern boat to be lowered and manned, which was sooner said than done. Mr. Nichols, the first officer, and four stalwart seamen stepped in and joined in the chase after Tom Delaney and the albacore, both of whom were about a half a mile at this time. It was glorious sport for the sailors, who enjoyed it exceedingly, but it was thought at the time that the case was different with regard to the Irishman and the fish. At least Tom's countenance, when a fair sight of it could be got, exhibited anything but pleasure. It looked, Mr. Davies said, for all the world like a Dutch galliot caught in a severe squall. This chase was continued for about 20 minutes by both boats, when Mr. Nichols contrived to come alongside of Tom, while Mr. Davis and the quarter-boat was heading the albacore off. Mr. Nichols did not at first attempt to haul Tom into the boat when he got hold of him, but with a sharp jackknife severed the line which attached him to the albacore, and then roused him on board in his leisure. The albacore, thus relieved of the clog which had so long and so unaccountably impeded his progress through the water, darted off on a tangent, with the grain sticking to him, and has never been seen since. Tom Delaney was conveyed on board, looking as sick and as sorry as a mast-headed midshipman in a gale of wind. Indeed, he was hardly able to crawl up the ship's side and did not make his appearance on deck for 2 days. He learned wisdom, however, from his adventure, and has often been since heard to say that he would never willingly take another cruise with an albacore for a pilot. Well, that was a silly little sea story, but a fun one nonetheless. I'd like to just take a quick minute and do a shout out for a series of sea stories that I've written. There are 4 stories in this collection. It's called the Sea Adventure Collection. The first story is actually free, and it's available on Amazon and iBooks and Smashwords and Barnes & Noble, so you can read it on your e-readers and your apps there. The first story, it's called 64 Days, a Sea Story, and it's about a Navy senior chief who is very close to retirement, but he is on an aircraft carrier out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and he gets put in charge of managing this disaster that's about to occur when this airplane that's having problems has to land on the flight deck. Great short story. It has over 100 reviews on Amazon and many reviews on Smashwords and iBooks. So you can grab that one for free. It's the first story in the series. There's another story called Shark Tooth Rosary, and it's a short romantic adventure story about a young man who is trying to get past the waterfront bars in the Philippines. He's been to the Philippines a few times, and he always gets stuck in the waterfront bars getting drunk and But he wants to get beyond the waterfront. He wants to get out into town, but he has a hell of a time trying to get through the bus station because all the signs are written in Tagalog and it's very confusing and he just can't seem to figure it out. But he has a breakthrough and he actually meets someone and it turns into a bit of a romance and it's the beginning of a great adventure. And that story is called The Shark Tooth Rosary. Another story, the third story in the series, is called Back to the Philippines. Again, we have a young sailor. He arrives in the Philippines aboard a Navy ship, and he has a plan to make a large sum of money. He's going to get involved in a little bit of smuggling. Dirty scoundrel that he is. And then the fourth story in this series is called Making Peace with Japan. And this, again, is a young sailor off of an aircraft carrier. This time, it's a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. And the aircraft carrier is arriving in Japan, and there are protesters. The local Japanese folks there and some of the people have come down from Tokyo. They are anti-nuclear activists, and they are protesting the arrival of this ship. And this young sailor knows why the Japanese are protesting, and he makes the connection between Hiroshima and Nagasaki and the U.S. involvement in World War II. And now the U.S. military is back in Japan now 40 years later with a nuclear-powered ship. And it's kind of a reckoning with history. But they meet some locals and they end up having a fun and interesting time. The story is called Making Peace with Japan. It's one of my favorites, one of my most heartfelt stories that I've ever written. And I really like it. And it's gotten good reviews as well. So as I mentioned, the first story, 64 Days, is available on all of your ebook apps, but the other 3 are only available on Amazon. There's 64 Days, Shark Tooth Rosary, Back to the Philippines, and Making Peace with Japan, all by myself, Malcolm Torres. I would greatly appreciate it if you would grab some copies of these books, read them, and post some honest reviews. Well, thanks for listening, folks, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Until then, take a look in the show notes, and you'll see lots of links in there to my Twitter and Facebook, Instagram accounts. You'll also find links to my YouTube channel and my blog. If you'd like to reach out to me, I'm at seastoriesandsciencefiction@yahoo.com. Drop me a note if you request any stories or have a story that you'd like to share with me. Maybe we can get it on the show. Until the next time, thank you and goodbye.